Welcome to Cannabis Health Radio, a podcast where we share stories from people around the world who are using cannabis as medicine. The information is meant to raise awareness about the health benefits of cannabis, but should not be taken as medical advice. Now, here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio Podcast. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Before we get started with our guest, I just want to clarify something that has been happening over the last little while. People reach out to us at Cannabis Health Radio, and we get an email from them. And if they're looking for help, I forward it to Corey. Corey responds, but Corey, you're not getting a response back.
I'm not getting a response back, no. So when you've forwarded that to me, when I respond to the person's message, then the email is coming from my email, not from Cannabis Health Radio, and I expect is likely going into spam. So for people who are writing to Cannabis Health Radio, anything where people are requiring help is forwarded to me from Ian, and then will come from manababe @gmail.com. So if you've written us and you haven't heard back, please check the spam folder.
Great. Now, in the time we've been doing these podcasts, I still can't get it straight in my own mind, the difference between Hodgkin's lymphoma and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So I had to look it up. They're both cancers that are adversely affect and spread through the body's lymphatic system. Lymph fluid carries a number of vital substances, including lymphocytes, which are infection-fighting white blood cells that play a key role in the body's immune system. Lymphoma is a form of cancer that affects the lymphocytes. The primary difference between Hodgkin and non-Hodgkin lymphoma is the type of lymphocyte that is affected. Hodgkin's lymphoma is marked by the presence of Reed-Sternberg lymphocytes, which a physician can identify using a microscope. In non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, these cells are not present. And that's about as clear as mud, but it's the best we can do. Now, here to tell us his amazing story of dealing with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma is Scott Menzies, who joins us from Scotland. Good of you to do this, Scott, considering you just got out of the hospital a few days ago. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to speak to you. It's nice to get on eventually and tell my story.
Now, you mentioned in the notes you sent us that you had some back issues in October of last year. Take us through this and tell us how that led to your diagnosis.
So basically, back in October 2021, I had a bad back, just usually from occupation, what sort of type, related injury. And this pain was there for quite some time. I'm not one for taking paracetamol if I've got a sore head, and I'm not one for, you know, taking any sort of pain medication if I'm in a lot of pain. So I dealt with the pain, you know, just naturally. I got a new bed, hoping that it was the mattress that was causing me the issues. But then eventually I went to the doctors in January and spoke to the nurse, but with the COVID situation, you know, you don't actually get seen by a doctor or whatever else. So the nurse just gave me some tablets to go away with, some naproxen and things like that, just to sort of manage the pain. And after that, I just continued to manage that pain. Leading up to going in January, I think it was, I went back to the doctors and ended up going back with a few lumps on my neck and some fever and night sweats.
So you went back to the doctor in January and you had lumps on the back of your neck. What was the diagnosis at that time?
The diagnosis at that time was actually pneumonia, and I also got asked to go for a COVID test, which I did willingly. All come back negative, and yeah, the diagnosis was, at the time, pneumonia with antibiotics, sent away for a couple of weeks, and I got some x-rays on that first week when I was at the doctor's, so a chest x-ray, I got some bloods done, and I got a phone call from the doctor that same week, claiming to be cancerous, or what he had seen in the x-ray was cancerous. And the other doctor, you know, went against that. He said he wouldn't have said that. So then it continued on with antibiotics. They cleared up and just sort of led on to there. Went for CT scans in February. And I also went for another lung specialist appointment. And they then at that appointment said it could be cancerous as well.
That's interesting that you went for a test and the doctor said that it was pneumonia. Another doctor says you have cancer or HIV.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
But the other doctor says, no, you've just got pneumonia.
Yeah, so it was kind of two-sided opinions on what was wrong with me at the time, which was quite worrying because, you know, if they don't know, then I don't know.
That's right.
Scott, so what did they say about the lumps on the back of your neck? I mean, I haven't heard lumpy neck as a symptom of pneumonia.
Yeah, you know, me either. So basically, they were claiming the lumps on the neck to be, you know, infection. So my high blood cell count was really high. My white blood cell count was really high, sorry. That was what they were claiming to be, was the problem. You know, there was some sort of infection within the body.
Did you have a gut feeling that something was really amiss or not really?
That's hard to say. Certainly after I started to feel better after the antibiotics, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go back to work. Things like that were starting to, you know, get back to the swing of things after being off for a few weeks. And then when I kind of started to come off the antibiotics and they weren't in my system anymore, I started to get worse and started to get more ill than I already had been. So it was quite worrying at the time. And I did have a gut feeling that there was something wrong that wasn't right. But it's hard to say when you've got all these thoughts in your mind of what it could be and what not be.
Yeah.
When were you diagnosed with stage 4?
I was diagnosed with the stage 4 on the 18th of March. Would have been, so after I went for my specialist lung appointment, I was went for an ultrasound biopsy as well. And after the biopsy results come in, was stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
What did they tell you about your life expectancy?
They never actually elaborated too much on that. They never went into sort of detail about the, you know, but they did go and tell me, you know, how long roughly treatment was going to last, and, you know, what 6 months I was looking at for the treatment that I was going to go under.
No, that was conventional treatment?
That was chemotherapy.
Chemotherapy, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, before we get into that, did you undergo chemotherapy at all?
Yeah, I did, yeah. But just a small, well, I did my full amount that they would want me to do eventually after a while, but it wasn't that got me to the result that I'll tell you about, obviously.
So on the 18th of March, you were diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind when you heard that?
Oh, all sorts. Just how has this happened to me, and what does this mean? All these kind of thoughts that you're worried about, and I didn't really know what I was about to go through. All I could say is an experience. Everything that I've sort of been through in the last couple of months, certainly been such a short space of time as well, so everything's been kind of overwhelming. But yeah, that's hard to explain. Or mixed emotions, certainly through the diagnosis and leading up to the diagnosis.
Scott, do you have a family?
Yeah, I still stay with my mum. So my mum and dad, and my wee brother as well. So.
Okay. And how old are you, by the way?
I'm 29.
29. So you're 29 and you have stage 4. How did your family react to all this?
Yeah, well, my mum, she was pretty distraught. She was very upset, as you could imagine. And I think my dad, he's a typical male, not letting on his emotions and how he feels.
Yeah.
So he would have been feeling it as well, but I think he was, yeah, a bit for me. But my wee brother, certainly as well, he was the same. Me and him are two different people, so we don't speak a lot. but he did feel the diagnosis, and so it kind of brought everybody closer together in a way.
Scott, when you got diagnosis, did you immediately start changing anything in your life?
Yep. So straight away, I changed my diet right away. I actually found out that going part vegan is supposed to be better rather than full vegan. So I did a bit of both. I like my meat, so I struggled without it. But certainly smoothies and stuff like that, you know, all these anti-cancerogenic property fruits and vegetables, and sort of went organic to start off with as well. So this is rather than buying from the supermarket. That was kind of the big thing that I changed the most. My diet was, I know I've heard on previous podcasts with you guys, a lot of guys drinking a lot of soda, as you call it, or fizzy drinks. I used to drink a lot of them for the day. I would be the kind of guy who would wake up for a brew or a cup of tea and a packet of biscuits for my, before I would set off to go to work. So that certainly cutting out a lot of sugars and certainly a lot of processed food as well that I was eating, certainly frozen food, you know, chicken nuggets, kind of freezer stuff, chips as well. So changed all that kind of in my diet.
Good for you.
That's great. You're the third person in a row we've interviewed, Corey, who's changed their diet dramatically. The last podcast we did, the woman in Newfoundland lost between 50 and 55 pounds. And she was doing exactly the same thing that you're doing, Scott, just cleaning up her diet.
Yep. Yeah. I've always knew that it was a big part, and that actually was staring me right in the face this time to change it. So I didn't have much of an option, and I always say that somebody else can't help you if you can't help yourself.
How did your friends react?
Friends were in a lot of shock, and certainly, you know, at my age group, I think they were, you know, like I say, I just really shocked. But everybody was great, you know, everybody come up to see me, supported me, tell me I've got to send me messages every day, and just communicating like we would need for normal, because everybody's now older, everybody's settling down. Families and kids and all these kind of things. So nobody keeps in touch as much, but everybody was great and came up, supported me, messaged me when I was going through treatment, good luck and all these kind of things and stuff like that. So,
tell us how you started on cannabis oil.
So the cannabis oil came into my knowledge. I've always been a recreational smoker or user anyway. But it was actually my family friend. He told me when I was younger at the golf, and he basically cured himself from terminal. No treatment, and just took cannabis oil, and I always was amazed at his story. And that always led me on to believe I always said that if I ever ended up in a situation like this, there's no question that I would use that to my advantage. So believe it or no, I just kind of jumped on it straight away, and just pretty much started taking it straight away as soon as I found out.
How were you taking it?
So I was taking it orally, and I was taking, to start off with, trying to follow the recommended dosage. Sometimes the dosage would slip up a wee bit unexpectedly, which I knew there was no harm in that for me. So I just basically kind of took it as much as I could when I could. But it was almost up to a gram a day within the first few days.
Wow.
He's hardcore.
That's what we do in Scotland.
Yeah.
What was your family, your immediate family, like your mom and dad, your brother, their response to you doing cannabis oil? Were they supportive of that, or were they kind of looking at you going,
Well, the story of me, how I found out about the cannabis oil, was actually my old man's friend, or my dad's friend. So, you know, he knew about his story, so my dad didn't comment on it too much. And my mum is all for it now, so she is just happy enough to see me on the other side. And it helped me, and if it helps, then she says, so be it. He's never really mentioned it too much, but sometimes to start off with, but I was really ill at the time anyway. I was in a lot of pain and stuff like that, especially from my back pain. Leading up to my treatment, my spine was really, really sore as well, and my back. So that kind of took away all that sort of pain, and they seen that, so... Yeah, we're quite all for it to start off.
Were you taking this all orally?
Yeah, everything was orally, yeah. I would put a wee bit of oil on a strawberry or a grape and just consume it like that, or sometimes just underneath the tongue.
Like royalty?
Yeah, like royalty, yeah.
was this oil made from more than one strain? You know,
It's hard to say, but yeah, I probably imagine so. Yeah, we probably made them more than one strain over the course that I took my oil over.
Right.
Now, being illegal in Scotland, was it difficult to obtain? Difficult to find?
You
don't mention any names.
No names, no names. I wouldn't put my mate on blast like that. No chance. But everything was easy enough. Quite accessible now, and I'd imagine more so than it was a few years ago.
Yeah,
definitely easy enough to get.
Scott, have you ever thought of doing suppositories? I mean, Corey can tell listeners the benefits of using suppositories as opposed to orally.
So 90% of cases, people who do suppositories don't get high. I think it's a lot higher than 90%. I've spoken to thousands upon thousands of people. I've only ever talked to one person who got high that way. The key to suppositories is an inch in, inch and a half max, no further. Otherwise, you will get high. But also, something that we've just learned in the last year and a half or so is the concentration of cannabinoids given rectally versus orally is 100 times stronger for THC, 250 times stronger for CBD, but no high.
There you go, Scott.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. And Corey has mentioned on previous podcasts that people with lung cancer who use suppositories do extremely well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, given your condition, if you don't want to get high, I mean, you're 29, you probably always want to do get high. But if you don't want to get high, just do suppositories and it has a much more beneficial effect on you.
Yeah. I heard your previous guy's podcast before mentioned suppositories as well. And the guy that actually led me on to using RSO was actually throat cancer and spread into the lungs.
Mm.
And he cured himself from terminal, but he was just, you know, captures rather than suppositories.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, too, is I wonder, particularly with Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's, whether this would up the chances. Because when you're doing it rectally, it is not absorbed via the blood vessels. It's actually absorbed via the fluid of the lymph nodes. That's how it gets into the system.
Yeah, I heard that on one of your podcasts, speaking of suppositories before, and I always wondered, that clicked in my mind, because I've been doing a lot of research into this as well, and listening to a lot of your previous shows. Actually, believe it or not, before I actually went under any treatment, when I was just diagnosed, I listened to a few previous podcasts of yourselves with a few guys with classic Hodgkin's lymphoma as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just took a wee bit away from the podcasts, and it really helped me throughout this journey.
Many years ago, we interviewed a woman in Glasgow, Lynn Cameron, who had brain cancer, and she today is still cancer-free because of the use of cannabis oil. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, and I always like to ask people this during an interview, is that when you went back to your doctor and got tested again, were you all clear?
Yeah, so after I started chemotherapy on the 6th of April, it was only 1.5 cycles. I ended up in the hospital after my first cycle with sepsis, and then they reduced my treatment for the second one. But when I done the second one, it was after that I got my next scan, and then when I went back then, everything was all clear. But for me, it was amazing. The time scale, it was only 29 days from stage 4, you know, the oil that's managed to.
What was your doctor's response?
So I still can't see any of my scans, but that might come around to it eventually, but I have requested 6 times. But I actually got a negative phone call, so I never got to sit down in a room with a doctor. He actually told me over the phone, so I didn't get a chance to see the response face to face. It was a few weeks later that I ended up going to my specialist nurse and sitting down. And I think they were even pretty amazed. There was some frosty in the room that day. But I still can't put my finger on what it was.
So there you go. Your lucky number is 29, because you're 29 years old. It was 29 days that you used cannabis oil, and you went from stage 4 to no evidence of disease.
Yep.
Fantastic. That is really fantastic. But your doctor won't show you the scan results.
Won't show me the scan results. And I'm just basically looking for, you know, a peace of mind thing. So, you know, you see it there and you see it gone. And that was basically why I wanted to see the scan results. But they won't show me them for some reason. I'm not saying that it's fishy, but I just feel as though there's something that's maybe not.
Did they know that you were using cannabis oil as well?
Yep, so basically, from the start, I just told them straight away, because, you know, my family friend's story, me and him share the same story now. So we were up here having a barbecue not that long ago, and, you know, we'll be celebrating the victory. but they, I told them straight away from the get-go. They never, ever told me no, and they never told me yes. So obviously I can't understand that they can't say yes or no. You have to do your job. But, you know, the indication of not, you know, saying no to me was enough.
Yeah, you put them in an awkward position, I think. They don't want to admit that that what you did worked.
That's it. That's it. Yeah, so I'm actually a legal medical cannabis patient in the UK now.
Oh, are you? What does that mean?
So they have a variety of medicines, basically, to help it with stuff. So they gave me CBD oil and they gave me sativa oil as well. But I've just started to, you know, use that. But it just obviously, you know, gives me the freedom, you know, being able to use, you know, the medicines that they provide in Scotland without any, you know, hassle.
Yeah.
Scott, are you doing a maintenance dose?
Well, that is definitely going to be the plan. I've had a couple of days where I haven't had any where I've been in the hospital. But I will be taking a maintenance dose for the rest of my days.
Please don't make that mistake of not doing that.
Not then. I always kick myself and make a mistake for going for the treatment, but you always don't want to put your eggs in one basket. So,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Corey has told people that the choice is yours to make, whether you want to do conventional treatment or not. The medical profession puts you in a very, very scary position, saying that, you know, you've got stage 4 cancer. We don't know how long you've got to live. And the last interview we did, the oncologist told this woman in Newfoundland that there's no hope for you. There's no hope for you.
Eat what you want. You're depriving yourself.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus. You got to ask yourself. I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is definitely like this. It's such an experience. That's all I keep saying, you know, to everybody. It's definitely an experience. Yeah, it's hard to explain. Yeah.
So do you have contact with others who have Hodgkin's lymphoma or non-Hodgkin's or cancer at all?
Yeah, so a lot of people have actually been coming to me and asking me what I did. Certainly, you know, I had a friend, one of his workmates, he was asking me what I did outside of treatment. I gave him the recommendations for all the diet type of stuff. Obviously, I explained the oil situation as well. He's same sort of disease as me, Hodgkin's lymphoma, and then there's a lot of other people coming back or coming to me now through friends and through family friends and through my girlfriend's family as well, and secondary cancers, and asking them, you know, about the oil and what they can do to, you know, help themselves, because everybody's amazed at my situation, how I, you know, quick I go over it. Certainly even in the hospital, they've been talking about me in the staff room and how quickly, so, you know. So these people are now asking me for, you know, the help, which I'm happy enough to do, and push them in the right direction. But there's a lot of stigma around about, you know, cannabis and cannabis oil in Scotland about being illegal.
An
older generation mentality, certainly for the most people to do it. But you're trying to give them the best advice that's going to help them in their situation as well.
Mm-hmm. So is your girlfriend happy that you made it?
Yeah, no. Definitely. Well, maybe not.
Yeah. I had to throw that in there.
Yeah, definitely. She'll be listening and she'll be laughing. Like.
Well, I think you're on. I think you're on the right track. You've cleaned up your diet. You're on cannabis oil. We've got to get you on suppositories and just to make sure everything works. What are you laughing at, Corey?
It's not saying a word.
Okay, that's it. Scott, what would you like to say in conclusion?
You know, if you ever find yourself in a situation like me, just obviously do whatever you can to help yourself, because there's, you know, nobody else is going to really help, you know, anybody by yourself, you know, yourself, basically.
Yeah, you've got to help yourself.
That's it. There's nobody else can help you. You're definitely a cannabis oil.
Right. Scott, good of you to do this, considering you just got out of the hospital a few days ago. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys. Much appreciated.
Thanks for listening to Cannabis Health Radio. For more information and to search previous podcasts, visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Subscribe so you don't miss new episodes. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by donations from our listeners. If you found the information helpful, please consider making a donation in any amount through our website. You can also help us share our message by leaving a review on your podcast listening platform. We are very grateful for your support. Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, it's Justin Benton, host of the Miracle Plant Podcast, where we discuss this miracle plant that goes by so many names and how it's helping people in so many extraordinary ways. So if you love this plant and you want to hear a story that tugs on those heartstrings and learn more about this plant, then head on over to the Miracle Plant Podcast. You'll be glad you did.